Hi, have you been in with us before?
That's how we're usually greeted at hip new restaurants these days, followed by a short presentation.
Awesome. Well, I'll give you a quick overview of the menu so you know what you're looking at.
There's a lot to learn.
Everything is going to be a small plate meant to be shared. The only exception to that is the smoked brisket at the bottom of the menu. It's our large format dish tonight. Up at the top, we have some vegetable forward plates that'll come out early to mid-meal. Below that, we have four house-made pastas and then a few fish and seafood plates below that. But I will go ahead and let you know that for two people, I would probably recommend doing five or six plates total. We usually recommend doing two to three plates per person. So yeah, the only other thing I'll mention is the kitchen does like to get your order in its entirety and will course everything out for you, but I'll give you a few more minutes to look everything over.
Dining at a restaurant has become a form of entertainment, so eating is no longer just the backdrop for other fun stuff. It is the fun stuff, kind of like how we used to get together for board games. Well, just like backgammon or checkers, restaurants come with instructions. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about restaurant trends from community tables where you sit with total strangers to open kitchens where you can watch your food being prepared. If you work in the restaurant business or go out to eat a lot, we'd love for you to weigh in. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. That's 816-235-2888. I'm joined by Jenna Telesca, editor-in-chief of the magazine Nation's Restaurant News. Hi, Jenna.
Hey.
So we're going to dig into those specific trends I just mentioned, but would you say that they all kind of do come down to this restaurant experience now being seen more and more as entertainment?
Yes, in part. So there's two things that are going on. We're seeing restaurants either become very, very convenient and work on being easily accessible or building that experience portion, giving people a reason to go out because the market is very saturated right now and there are so many places to buy food.
So like you're going to grab it for takeout maybe or you're going to stay there for a long time and be really, really into everything that's happening.
Right. So you'll have like somebody like Domino's who will let people order their standing order with like an emoji. and then you also have meal kit providers sending, ingredients that are already portioned. And then you have convenience stores that are growing in their prepared food offerings. So there's lots of places where you could quickly grab a bite to eat. It's not just enough to have food. So you either need to be really, really convenient or be someplace people want to go for a reason.
So
experience portion.
For the experience side of it, it almost sounds like the dining out version of an arms race among restaurants.
Definitely.
Well, okay, so this greeting that we heard from a local restaurant, which it's not just about that one restaurant. This is something that I've noticed for a while now, but that it's become more and more common. This idea that you walk into a place, you sit down, and then you're approached by someone who asks, "Have you been here before?" and then proceeds to tell you how it works here. I'm curious what is going on that we cannot just figure out how it works on our own.
Right. So it's a way for restaurants to market how they differentiate themselves and their specialness. So, a restaurant that's trying to build a unique experience and lead people on a journey, by asking, "Have you been here before?" you're saying, "We do things a little different here. We're special." And if folks have been there before, they get to say, "Yes, I'm in on it. I know how to navigate this interesting way of presenting food."
Is it partly that, it seems like the one entree per person approach to ordering is kind of breaking down as a norm that you can just assume is the case?
Oh, not like having people share?
Yeah, like this whole, you don't know how many dishes to order per person anymore because it's not necessarily the case that you're each going to order an entree and that the appetizers are for sharing and that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it depends on the restaurant for sure, but there's been growth in this community aspect where, again, this is an event where you're sitting together and you're enjoying your meal together. And you're also, especially younger diners, they want to try new things, but they want to do it in a low-pressure way. They don't want to have one item and they take a risk on something different and they don't like it and then you're stuck with it. So by doing this, you could try a few different things and know that you will leave full.
So Is that really at the heart of the small plate trend, the idea of sharing, or is there more to it? I'm kind of curious about what we heard about that the kitchen is going to course it out for you and that they want your order in its entirety. Is that partly about, I don't know, it's kind of a mix and match idea where someone is still going to curate for you on some level what really belongs together at the same time, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So that kind of faux tasting menu approach. But we're seeing a lot of curation over customation. Before, you know, you would make your own salad, you could do this, you could do that. We always said younger consumers like to be able to control their meals. And
yeah, like dressing on the side, that kind of stuff? Or is that not what you mean?
Yeah, dressing on the side, or you make your salad up. You know, you don't pick one of the examples from, like, the salad place, you know, like the New Yorker salad or something. But when you make your own salad up, you're not necessarily a chef. It might not be the most delicious thing, so you might leave not happy with that place. But by giving some more options and curating, you allow people to work with you to develop something that they'll like, and that shows off your experience and how you know how food tastes best.
That is super interesting. So you were saying curation over customization. So it's like you have some control over the pieces that are fitting together in your meal, but there's still someone using professional expertise when it comes to the details.
Right.
Okay. So that's kind of the have you been here before, here's how it works idea. But what about something else we've noticed, which is the open kitchen trend? It seems like as restaurants remodel, something that you can pretty much anticipate is that the new space is going to have a kitchen that you can see into. What's the deal with that?
Well, this plays into this is ongoing over the past 10 years that you see people are more and more interested in where their food comes from. So, you know, you see all these moves on sourcing, transparency. So by having this open kitchen, it's very clear that this food is fresh and you can see how it's done. And it also
that there aren't deep, dark secrets going on the other side of that wall.
Right. And McDonald's, back when it opened, being able to see what was happening was a large draw from it. So we're kind of coming back to something that we, you know, treasured before. But there's also the trend of, like, the, you know, the celebrity chef. And everyone wants to watch cooking shows. It's fascinating, and there's the drama and excitement. So this is putting the chefs at center stage.
The use of the word stage is intriguing because for a little while I was doing some work for a local dairy, and I did cheese tastings around town. And at one of the grocery stores where I was doing a cheese tasting, someone who worked there greeted me and asked me if I had done culinary theater before. And the phrase culinary theater has really stuck with me.
I hadn't heard that, but that's perfect. I mean, it does pose a challenge, right? Because chefs don't necessarily want to be theater people. They don't necessarily want to be an actor. So it's when you're designing these new kitchens, you have to think about things you didn't have to think about before. You know, running a kitchen isn't always glamorous to look in. So, you know, there's strong smells, it's loud, and it's lit for function. So you got to make sure you have the right ventilation, the right sound, and the right lighting, right? Like the way you would light a stage.
So, yeah, and So as a diner, you are an audience for this spectacle, basically.
Yeah, in a way.
And what's your sense of how people who work in those kitchens feel about their performances? You mentioned that chefs are not necessarily actors.
I mean, more and more, there is a celebrity chef culture, and some people embrace it. And in that case, they will have an open kitchen. And other times, you know, they're just trying to show that they have nothing to hide. Some people like traditional ways of doing things. So I think it really depends on the individual chef. There is definitely benefits, and we're seeing more and more chefs get comfortable with the idea of, you know, they're being a large part of the restaurant experience and not just the person that does the food.
Well, there's a place here in Kansas City in a neighborhood that's called the River Market. It's called Il Lazzarone, and it's a cool little pizza place. They have an open kitchen, so you can see the pizzas being made. They're made in a wood-fired oven. Here's what the chef, Jeff Young, had to say about it.
When we first opened, we were completely full, people waiting outside the door and customers coming back asking about the oven. We got 10 million things going on, and this person that has no idea about wood-fired pizza wants to know what kind of wood we're using. Is this oven old? No, it's brand new. We just opened. So, and we only burn oak. And so, yeah, thank you. Have a nice day. Oh, can I see inside? Where does that vent at? Oh, yeah. Well, let me just give me just 1 second and let me take care of that for you.
So this cracks me up because I had never really thought about the possibility that an open kitchen also is an invitation for people to ask questions and weigh in on what they're observing that might be a little new for people who work in restaurants.
Mm-hmm. So it's fostering a community between, you know, the front, the diners, and the back of house people that traditionally wouldn't talk. But it's nice because it's an opportunity to share their expertise in the way like curation is. They're able to, you know, they know a lot about this. They thought a lot about why to use that wood, and they can tell those diners why.
The other, you know, there's the diner, there's the diner's experience, and then there's the chef and cook experience. And usually, you know, I guess I'm interested in the idea that some of the new trends are making people uncomfortable, or at least pushing them a little bit out of their comfort zone. On the diner side of that, we have the communal table. And I feel like I am seeing more and more restaurants setting up, you know, benches and long tables where you might be seated with people you didn't come with.
Yeah, I mean, they have been around for a while. There's this place in New York called Joe's Shanghai, and it's been around since the 90s. And it's known for you go there, it's always packed, and you go and sit with whoever's there, right? You've got two spots and you're glad for it. You wait an hour to sit there. But we are seeing new places do this, kind of build that sense of community. There is a place called New Bohemia in Minneapolis, and they specifically are doing this to connect singles and millennials that want to talk to each other. So they're using that, and they're also using things like the games, like you were talking about before, having games at the beer hall, and going back to this old idea of the beer hall where you have giant long tables and people can play shuffleboard and bocce ball and hockey. And it made people, once they added those games, people's average stay went from a half hour to an hour and a half. So they made it not just a place you stop and get a drink, but you stop, hang out, eat food, and hang out with your friends.
So those places really market and sort of build their whole concepts around the idea that you're coming here to meet people.
Right.
Well, the community table, especially when it appears in restaurants that aren't particularly marketed that way, can be kind of a polarizing thing that people love or hate. And we asked some Kansas Cityans what they thought about it. Here's what they told us.
I think it's fine as long as they're nice and polite.
And they don't mind a baby.
Incredibly powerful experience to be able to, like, converse with strangers over a shared
meal. You have to all be very committed to it, which is sometimes the problem with community
tables. Well, I'm from
Panama.
So for me, having a dinner or sitting for eating with strangers, it's a great experience to share, to learn.
Some people go and kind of get roped into it, and they're not ready to try to chat to the person next to them.
I feel like it shouldn't be awkward. I feel like, you know, it's an opportunity to meet another person. Why not?
So when you hear about this idea that you have to really commit to it, or on the other end, that this can be a really powerful experience, what do you think is either powerful about it or just totally off-putting?
Well, it's connecting people and allowing people to make new friends. But I could see it being, but there's also the opportunity to just sit at the same table and not talk to each other, like New York City style, right? We're always like right next to each other, not talking to each other. So
I don't know if Midwesterners can handle that.
Yeah, maybe you guys are too friendly. Yeah. No, I think it can be a powerful experience because it could change the idea of experience is important in restaurants because every time you go, they want to make it a different experience so that you're not like, I've already done that. So by having new people with you, you're changing the experience each time. So I think that can be pretty powerful.
We're joined now. We've got a caller at 816-235-2888 who wants to talk to us about what he's seeing, Connor and Lenexa. Hi, Connor.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. What do you want to share?
So I've been in the restaurant industry for pretty much the past about 12 years, and for the past 4 or 5 of those in management. And I've seen a lot of interesting trends, both as a bartender, server, and as a manager. But I think the chief among them is how largely food trends are being dictated by diners now. So I think in our industry, the consumer is really king, because whatever they, you know, what's the old adage, you know, the customer is always right. So a lot of restaurants will start tailoring their menus towards exactly what their consumer base is asking for. I mean, I think that's why you've seen so much outcropping of these like vegan restaurants, or every restaurant now has like gluten-free options available for everybody who's trying to cut that out of their diet. So I think that it's interesting how strongly guided the industry is based on direct consumer feedback, because I mean, we're in the industry of talking to people as much as we are serving them. So,
and you don't think that that's always been the case, that that customer tastes, that people's taste in food or desire out of the experience has driven the industry? That's new?
Oh, I think that it's a little bit more in the spotlight, just because food for so long was just a necessary evil for a lot of people. And the dining experience, of course, there's always been traditional dining. But I think in the past, you know, decade or so, with like Food Network getting so big and people really caring about where their food comes from and learning how to cook themselves, and just like what you guys were talking about with like open concept kitchens. I mean, I used to work in one of those as well, and people would love to stand right by the kitchen and see exactly what's going on. So I think now guests are getting a little bit more connected with what they're buying, and they want to have that conversation. And I think now management is forced to listen to those things, because there is such stiff competition for the restaurants.
Yeah, let's hear from our nation's restaurant magazine editor, Jenna.
Yeah, I mean, right now people are very aware of what their diners think, as he was saying, because it's so easy to give feedback, right? You can be tweeting, you have the open concept kitchens, you can hear them tell you, I don't like this, or I do like this, why don't you have that? And operators are definitely cognizant of that, but they also, I think the smartest ones are paying attention to those trends, but also making sure they're not just reacting to them, and then creating this like opportunity of discovery for customers, so that they're able to kind of learn new things through that restaurant.
It is interesting to me that this idea of food formerly being a, as our caller put it, a necessary evil. Just that goes along with the idea that you would want to sit at the table and have someone else in the kitchen just taking care of preparing it, and then it would appear. Whereas now, as there's all this interest in how to cook and how to the different flavors on your palate or whatever, you know, like that people don't want to be kept in the dark from what's going on. They want to watch and maybe learn and even imitate at home.
Yeah, and it depends on the time, right? Like sometimes you just want the food to come fast, right? For lunch, you're going to go in, you go out. You're going to go to the food truck, right? And you'll come out. And then sometimes you want to go there and you want to have a special experience. So it's just making sure your concept is right for the right diner.
What else are you noticing?
That's happening right now?
Yeah.
I think the thing that I'm noticing that people want to do, restaurants want to do, is they want to create a special, they want to make sure that they're personalizing the experience and marketing directly to their diners. So by using technology, and I don't think most of them are there yet, but for instance, they would know that when you came to this restaurant that you're allergic to nuts. You tell them once, maybe you even put it in when you make a reservation. And then every time you come, it's in there, and they make sure that they cater the menu to you, and you don't even have to have that awkward conversation where you're like, I'm allergic to nuts. What has nuts? And, you know, it can be embarrassing, things like that. So collecting information about you in a comfortable way, not a creepy way, and being able to cater that experience is something that I'm seeing people want to do. And also trying to market directly to them. So let's say you go to this restaurant every Thursday after you go to the gym and you don't go one Thursday, they can push to you, hey, you notice you didn't come. Here's the thing you like at 50%. Come on in. So I think that's, you know, the dream right now for restaurants to get to.
Something that I'm curious about that's just sort of, I would say, in the baby stages in Kansas City, and I'm wondering where this goes, is the tasting room concept, where like the really high-end dining experience is, it sounds like to me, one of the new directions that's going is this experience where a limited number of guests pay a lot of money for essentially a private experience with a chef who prepares a multi-course menu and comes and talks about it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's, again, the theater. You have that one-on-one connection to the chef. You get to try a bunch of new things. And I've been seeing more and more fairly affordable tasting menus. You know, before you would think of it as the expensive option. But, you know, it's still pricey. It's still a splurge. It's still a special thing to do. But it's getting more and more within, you know, grasp of more people.
Jenna Telesca with us from Nation's Restaurant News Magazine. Thanks so much for sharing your observations.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
And now it's time for you to join the conversation with our food critics. They'll be reviewing the new local restaurants and sharing some of the most exciting developments in area kitchens. Tell us about the place near you at 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and the food critics are here. Charles Ferruza, Mary Black, Jenny Vergara. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ooh. So we're talking about new restaurants since about summer, just this season's newest fare and exciting changes within existing places. And I want to start by asking, you know, we just heard about restaurant trends. What are you guys thinking of as local trends before we just dive in here?
Well, you know, to me, it feels like fine dining has gotten a lot more casual. To me, that would be kind of number one on my list.
I don't think. Is there a fine dining restaurant left in Kansas City?
Well, I would call Blue Stem a fine dining restaurant.
Not the lounge, but
white tablecloth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think what Jenny's saying is that idea of the high-end restaurant is changing from the white tablecloth to something else.
Right. Mm-hmm. The more formal service and all of that is kind of, and you know, we're asking for more casual opportunities, I guess, when we eat out. So I think that's probably one of the biggest ones that, you know, just within the last probably 5 years I've seen.
Well, I think the myth of the fine dining restaurant, maybe it's not a myth, is that they're outrageously expensive and no one can afford to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the portions have changed. You know, it was the little tweezer thing and small, and now people are saying, I want a meal.
Right.
I want to leave full. Okay.
Yes.
Well, so Mary, start us off here. Talk to me about, we've got the two Monarchs. So we have Monarch Bar and Monarch Coffee.
Yes. Monarch Bar is a gorgeous new space in the same building where JJ's and Jack's, the Polzinelli building.
So to the west of the plaza.
Yes. And they have an outdoor patio. They have a beautiful bar with the monarch butterfly sculpture above it. And the really interesting thing about this bar is that none of the glasses or liquor bottles are above the bar. So you can see through around the whole room. And so the bartenders figured out a system to make sure that they could reach everything they needed to under the bar. They have a bar cart, like a Caesar salad cart for making specialty drinks. And then they have
pull it up by the table?
Yes. So they have a huge bar that's a rectangle, and then they have seating around the bar that you can reserve, and I highly recommend it. And then they have a small parlor room, which is for private parties, where they have even fancier cocktails and a food and drink minimum.
So what is like one of the fanciest cocktails you can get?
Well, we should start by saying all the cocktails are between $12 and $15 a piece. So these are really very curated. Everything in each of these drinks is made in-house. They're not doing a lot of just ordering off the shelf and stocking. So in the other thing, too, is that because it's called the Monarch, it has this theme. The cocktail menu has a theme that really follows the flight pattern, if you will, of the Monarch butterfly. So as the Monarch travels across on its path, on its migration path, wherever it would pass or land is kind of represented somehow in drink form on this menu.
Tropical cool. or mm-hmm. winter.
Yeah.
And it's worth going just to read the menu. It's a beautiful menu.
It's a really pretty menu. Agreed.
This is very exciting. Okay. And Jenny, you have talked about that the food at the Monarch Bar is snackable.
Yeah. So Teresa Oda, who used to be at Jack's, is now at Monarch, and she's just a doll. And they really, I mean, when you're paying that much money for cocktails, you're really there probably to drink more than eat. So it's just a lot of small plates. You know, less than 10, probably small plates, but she's changing it up pretty frequently. And there's always something that if you just have to have something to eat while you're there, I wouldn't recommend anybody like go for dinner and think you're going to get enough food because it's really just very small shared plates just meant for enjoying with, obviously, the cocktails there.
So are they salty?
Oh, they're salty and sweet. And there's some that are more Asian, some that have more kind of spice or chili to them, some that are just like meat and cheese tray. I mean, it's just kind of all across the board. She really mixes it up quite a bit, which is kind of exciting.
So that's Monarch Bar on the west side of the plaza.
Yes.
And Mary, you're also telling us about Monarch Coffee, which I believe is unrelated.
It is totally unrelated, except for the name. And it's in a space on Broadway, about 36 on Broadway, that is really stunning.
It's been called the most Instagrammable coffee shop in Kansas City at the moment. So.
I'm 36 on Broadway, I'm trying to figure where that is.
It's near the Uptown.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I saw you there.
I did. So that was funny. This is, I was going to say, I was really surprised when I walked in the door there because we have so many coffee shops in town that I hadn't really noticed that there was a type of coffee shop that we don't have in Kansas City. I mean, until this place. I
yes.
feel like when I am visiting another city, you will enter spaces like this that are sort of bright and open and airy and sort of have a, I don't know, sophisticated feel.
Very sophisticated.
Looking out over the sidewalk. That coffee shops in Kansas City have tended toward this personality of small, cozy, dimly lit. It's just a very different feel.
Yes. This is not a Portlandia type of coffee shop, and they've got the Rolls Royce of coffee machines in the middle. It's beautiful. I would not suggest going there for a meeting, which is what I did, because with the high ceilings, it can be very loud. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely worth going to. It's beautiful.
So the atmosphere you like. What do you think of the coffee and pastries and everything?
I have not had a pastry, but the coffee was excellent.
Who does the pastries?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, so that's Monarch Coffee, and it's in Midtown. Jenny, talk to me about another new place that we've talked about a little bit on this show, but we talked about it right before it opened, EJ's Urban Eatery.
Right. So John Smith has been on the show many times. He's a wonderful chef here in Kansas City, and he's brought us our first Southern-inspired meat and three, where you order, basically you order a your choice of meat, your choice of protein, and then you get to pick three sides from a long list. And it changes quite a bit. And every day he's posting different pictures of specials he's doing online. So if you're curious to see what the food looks like, you should definitely follow him on Facebook or social media. But it's open breakfast and lunch right now and happy hour. So open till 6, basically, from like 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. is how long he's open. They've got a full bar. It's the former Woodweather space down in the West Bottoms. And it's just really comforting and cozy. And, you know, I think he's doing a great, he is the perfect chef to do kind of the Southern inspired. He's the one with the white barbecue sauce. If everybody remembers, we talked about that not that long ago on this show. So.
And how was that? I mean, we tried it. I tasted it in a spoon. And so I'm guessing it's a different experience.
I don't know that I would suggest a jar and a
right.
spoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over
Unless
meat.
You really like mayonnaise.
Right. Over meat, it's lovely. I mean, it's very savory and it just kind of actually melts into the meat and gives it just a nice little kind of vinegar wang to it. I mean, it's delicious.
But lest you think that's all it is. I mean, you mm-hmm. could get what he calls breakfast ribs with a smoke eye hollandaise. They've got fried chicken, hot or mm-hmm. mild. And for people who don't want a huge lunch, they have a blackened salmon sandwich. They have several salads. So you don't have to be
That's right.
a trucker.
Oh, and don't forget
there.
Dessert. I had one of the best, and I'm not a bread pudding fan, but I had one of the best bread puddings there. So lots to love about EJ's Urban Eatery.
And this place has got just tons of buzz
among people who are inside the local food scene.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm curious what it is about this place that's generated that kind of enthusiasm.
I think part of it is John, because he's well-known.
The chef owner.
Yes. Well-known in the restaurant industry, and he's worked in a number of kitchens in Kansas City.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that Meat and Three is a very popular hot concept right now.
Explain that.
It's almost like an old cafeteria concept.
That's right. It is. I mean, it goes back. The history of this goes way, way back. But for whatever reason, right now in the United States, in many, many food cities, there are lots of chefs that are starting to open Meat and Three. St. Louis just got their first Meat and Three. So this is one of those things where I just think it's also kind of the right time, right place. And it provides value for those people who really do kind of want to get enough food for their money. This is the way to do it. But this used to be just a working man's lunch. You know, this is how we fed the workers.
So EJ's Urban Eatery in the West Bottoms. Let's stay in the West Bottoms for just a minute. The Ship, which started as an under the radar, shall we say, bar.
Nautical themed bar.
Yeah. And now they've got a whole meal service.
Right. Much to their credit. That was kind of always lacking from The Ship, I think. It had plenty of atmosphere, great music, and, you know, good ice cold drinks. But they do have now built in the back a whole brand new kitchen with a smoker. They've got a countertop where you can sit at the counter and order. And the food's really good. They've got entrees and specials. And there's a lot of kind of barbecue meat and barbecue dishes that are being served. But this summer, I had a great caprese salad. I've had an incredible Reuben there. I mean, and you can eat also in the bar area. So wherever you sit, you can dine. But I kind of prefer to go and sit at the counter where you can kind of see the action in the kitchen. That's my jam.
This is all so weird because, you know, when I moved to town and was drinking very, very heavily, I used to go to the Old Ship on, I believe it was 11th Street.
Right. That sign and some of the decor comes from that space.
Well, it was great because in those days, you know, the interior of the place was like a it looked like the set of Anything Goes. Mm-hmm. And they had they would pull a lever and there were baffles in the walls that sand would go through. And it really did sound like a ship on the sea. But, you know, you'd be lucky to get a cracker there in those days. I mean, they didn't have any kind of food.
Because that's not what it was about.
No, it's when you go in there to drink.
Well, and I do think it's part of the bar business trying to figure out how to get as much market share. Because you don't want to have to go somewhere for drinks and then go somewhere else to eat. They want all of that to stay.
I think people used to walk to Nichols Lunch.
Oh, well, there you go. Days. That's right.
Well, so, okay, we're talking about The Ship in the West Bottoms that they now have food service. And you've talked about some of the different dishes you've tried there. Anything else you want to say about the food itself before we move on?
Like I said, breakfast and lunch and dinner at The Ship. And like I said, give it a shot. You know, this is not a flash in the pan.
I would assume it's a limited menu.
It's really not a limited menu. He's got a really good, nice size menu with salads and sandwiches and breakfast items and a giant kitchen. I mean, he's built a full-on commercial kitchen. This isn't just them winging it. They're serious about food now at The Ship. So
glad to know there's another place for a good Reuben.
Amen. That's right. You love Reubens.
I do.
Get in there.
So, Charles, talk to me about Can I Have a Bite?
Kathy Hale's new. I would say it's not really a restaurant as much as it's a carryout place. It's pretty small. And Kathy Hale used to be a KCOR restaurant critic back in the 1980s. And I think she wrote for The Pitch. And this place is real sweet. She has smoothies and things like that, but she has some excellent carryout organic and vegetarian meals.
Well, now I want to jump in here because the idea of a restaurant being strictly tailored to the carryout experience is kind of interesting to me.
Well, I mean, they have a counter and maybe a couple tables, but mostly I think her business is carryout. And it's the kind of stuff you would think an organic and healthy restaurant would have. Sandwiches, salads, soups. There are some entrees that you definitely carry out because I think most of them are frozen. But I've had curry chicken there that was out of this world with organic chicken. And
so you come to this restaurant to get basically freshly prepared foods that are frozen or whatever here instead of like in a box in the freezer section or something.
Right. There is no freezer section. I mean, there's frozen
food.
Right,
I mean like the freezer section of a grocery store.
Right. No, I mean, a lot of the stuff you order, they go in the back and get it for you. And mostly it's been made that day.
So this is kind of like earlier in the show, we were talking about restaurant trends and that they're either going toward an elaborate experience, such as
a bar that feels nautical in its decor, 100% serving great food, and you're going to be there and be in this ship-like experience, or pop into this place, grab your chicken curry, and go home.
Right, right.
We're redefining convenience is basically what's happening right now in the food industry. And we're just, you know, restaurants in general, we're just trying to figure out how we can, you know, garner more market share, get more people in the door for more opportunities.
Well, and I also think part of it is that people don't, you know, when they've been working all day, they don't want to come home and cook.
That's right.
And but they also don't want to go to Casantina's Market or Price Chopper, and which tend to have the very same stuff on their deli, macaroni and cheese, chicken fingers, blah, blah, blah.
Well, when you eat out every day, you can't have hamburgers and pizza.
Right. You need something healthy.
Yeah, you need something else in your diet. So these
places... They, by the way, she makes the best hummus wraps that I've ever tasted.
That sounds good.
Yeah, really good.
Okay, so that's Can I Have a Bite? On the sort of more convenient end of the spectrum, the quick and easy type offering, how about Tiki Tacos?
Yeah, Tiki Tacos is one of those. It's kind of billing itself as a late night spot on 39th Street. It's just a walk up to the window and order at the window. Then they have a couple of picnic tables there on the sidewalk that you can sit and eat, or you can obviously take them to go with you. They do have a bit of a hidden camera that videotapes people. I think it's probably a security cam, but they've actually been doing some fun things on social media where it's showing people dancing late night, or, you know, they've got music playing out there. But it's Mexican fare, so street tacos. They have some of the best fish tacos in Kansas City right now at this place.
When you say there's a window that you order from, is that where...
it's been so many things.
Yeah, that's all you needed to say. Yeah.
The hot dog, the cupcake, the
ice cream.
The Miami Ice,
It's been all that.
No, it's not Miami Ice.
Oh, not Miami Ice. Yeah. Sorry, I take it back.
Yep. No, it was, and also Mediterranean. It's just east of Bob Wasabi and the cleaners and right
across
there.
The street too, isn't it?
I live very close, and the fact that they're open late night is great. So if I come home from an event that I've worked and I'm starving, I can just get on my tennis shoes, walk down there, and enjoy.
So that's Tiki Tacos on 39th Street, and we're going to hear about some more new places and some closings when we come back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCOR Central Standard, and you can chime in if you like, 816-235-2888. Back in a minute. Welcome back to KCOR Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman here with the food critics, Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, and Jenny Vergara. Charles joins us from 435 Magazine. Mary blogs at Around the Block, and Jenny is with us from Feast Magazine. Hi again, everyone.
Hello.
So we've been hearing about the cool new places that have opened lately in Kansas City or that have changed their food service in some really significant way. And I want to talk about Parkway Social Kitchen, because Mary and Jenny have both brought that one up. You guys, tell me about this place. It's on the plaza.
It is, and it's great because it's owned by the same people as who own Rock Hill Grill. But I love that there are several restaurants opening on the plaza that are independent restaurateurs instead of the chain. I think that's one of maybe four that are opening or recently opened. And the former chef of Houston's is currently in the kitchen. And this is the same group that's going to be partnering with Joe's Kansas City to open a restaurant in the Power and Light. If you picture kind of a Houston's style, burgers, hamburgers, chicken, salads,
ribs.
Sandwiches. Yes, ribs.
They did a great job remodeling this. This is understated elegance, and it's really straightforward, but the footprint of the restaurant has gotten bigger. They've moved some things around, compressed the kitchen, and there's a giant bar area now that wasn't there before that's really social. Lots of happy hour stuff happening there. And then the dining room itself, you know, they're serving really high quality. I mean, people shouldn't confuse this with a casual place. I mean, this is nice fine dining. If you want a nice steak or a nice roasted chicken or a piece of salmon, this is the place to get it. But it's very Houston-esque. There's lots of...
Would I be correct in assuming there is no pizza?
No.
That is correct.
No pizza. But artichoke spinach dip, French dip that Houston's was so famous for. I mean, there's lots of familiar favorites. So it's fun. I was just there last night, and it was rocking.
So people who have been really, like, saddened by the loss of Houston's, it sounds like they can satisfy some of their cravings there, even if it's not the same old place?
Maybe a few items.
The menu's very straightforward, though. I mean, there's not a lot of It, kind of the pushback from the fussy fine dining with tweezer food, this is really the reverse of that. This is really just, you know, wood-fired pork chops and roasted chicken and steaks.
Do they have the same kind of Stepford service that Houston's used to have?
No, actually they don't. It's much more casual service, style of service than what Houston's did. But it's still great. It was a great experience.
Parkway Social Kitchen is what we're talking about. And I'm really curious about Brady's Public House in the old Mike's Tavern location.
That's a, they you would not recognize Mike's Tavern if
That's
you
right.
went in there now.
That's right.
And Sean Brady,
this is on Troost.
Yes. And Sean Brady, who used to be at the Reserve downtown in the Ambassador Hotel, is now there. And you need to go in and just listen to him talk. I love his accent. He's an Irishman, and he's serving mostly Irish dishes.
Traditional?
Although, yes, shepherd's pie and that sort of thing. I'm happy to say they do have a really good hamburger and French fries, so it's not all Irish.
Their curry fries, I would walk on hot coals for them. But, you know, the inside of the place, really, I mean, Mike's was, to be kind, it was a dive bar. It was a college dive bar, and they've really dressed it up and added a dining room and an open kitchen.
So can I ask, is it expensive?
Oh, I didn't think it was.
No.
I thought it was right in the ballpark. I mean, it's not high-end for sure, but it's very casual and warm. Full bar, obviously, lots of wonderful Irish whiskeys. 'Cause
Mike's was pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's Brady's Public House over on Troost in the 50s over there.
That's right.
And then, you know, we've got a new concept for Michael Smith, and we talked about that some on this show, but of course that was, again, like right before it was getting ready to start. How is it? He's doing an Italian concept.
You know, I love what Michael's done. And I have to say, I didn't always choose to go to the and eat on the Michael Smith side of things because it just felt a little more formal than maybe what I was used to. And
Stiff.
I tended to go to the extra virgin side more often. It was just more raucous, more fun, kind of more my speed.
And these are adjacent crossroads.
Yes, sorry.
Upscale spots.
Sister restaurants next door to each other.
And Michael Smith does still have white tablecloths.
Yes, yes. But, you know, now that you go in there, so basically at the 10-year anniversary mark, Michael Smith and his wife Nancy came out and basically said that they were going to turn over and be an Italian instead of modern American. They're now going to be more of an Italian restaurant. So all the dishes on the menu have completely changed, and there's a whole section now of handmade pastas that he's doing in the restaurant, which I think are really worth mentioning because each of them are unique and very, very special. But the entrees, soup, salad, appetizers, all of that now speaks Italian, speaks with an Italian accent. And I love it. It feels more lively, more warm, more cozy in that dining room. I think it's a great decision.
And my husband is really excited that they have a pasta tasting menu, so you can just get a bunch of pastas for your dinner.
Woo-hoo. Pasta does not seem like a quantity thing, though. So like a lot of different pastas, I've always wondered about that.
Well, but it's not like you're getting huge bowls. Yeah. So you could easily have three different
ones. Is it sort of like the Lydia's tasting?
No.
The sauces are really international. They're very cosmopolitan, for lack of a... I mean, this isn't like red sauce, white sauce, pesto. I mean,
can you give examples of what they are?
There was one that I had that was squid ink pasta that he had made in-house. So it was this beautiful black pasta. And it had this interesting kind of... chili spice to the sauce that was on it. It had just a little tiny bit of cheese, and it was a very small, manageable portion. And it was part of the pasta tasting, actually. I did do that the last time I was in there. And I walked away thinking that almost has like an Indian spice flavor to it to me. It doesn't necessarily read Italian, but it makes it very interesting to eat, very colorful.
We're going to get to closings and some opening soon kind of stuff. We'll just touch on those before we go. But first, I am very curious, Jenny, about something on your list, Ad Astra Market, which it sounds like is food and flowers?
Yes. So these are two best friends that have opened this up on Johnson Drive. The shop itself is adorable. They've really done a nice job. But basically, one of them is a chef, and she's doing kind of grab-and-go salads. There is a communal table where you could kind of stay and hang out, but there's obviously coffee to have. She's a really wonderful baker, so there's sweets that you can order. But they're really hoping, and then obviously her girlfriend on the flip side is doing flowers and flower arranging. So they're hoping to come together and cater your next party or birthday or anniversary. Really, really two talented ladies on Johnson Drive doing food and fresh flowers.
I like that combo. Mm-hmm. And Mary, tell us about the new chef at Cafe Sebastian.
Remy Aish has come from Chicago. She was briefly at the Oliver, but she was in restaurants in New York City, but when she was in Chicago, she was named one of the top 10, 12 tastemakers there. So she's got
a talented lady.
She is a very talented woman, and she's starting to revamp the menu and adding her own touches to it.
And how is the restaurant different? I mean, Chef Jen Maloney, you know, really shaped the vision for this place in so many ways, and she died unexpectedly a while back, and this is a new thing that there's someone else at the helm.
Actually, there was somebody after Jen, and now Remy has taken over. So I think there's a little bit more Mediterranean flavor, I would say, but she's still revamping. But it feels like Cafe Sebastian.
So this
still
is
does.
The restaurant in the Kemper Museum.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about what's coming. We have three places that seem to be really drawing your attention. A new Rye location on the plaza, and then Hogshead and Messenger Coffee and Ibis Bakery.
Yes, absolutely. So Hogshead is basically going to be right where the old California Pizza Kitchen used to be. And it's kind of gastropub. A lot of local purveyors and local farmers will be used. Everything obviously sourced locally. They're going to have a full bar, but not a large bar. It's more about kind of eating at this establishment, although they'll certainly have a full drink and cocktail menu that they'll be doing. I think they're even barrel aging some cocktails in some wood barrels at this point, which is what the Hogshead is in reference to. So, but I'm really interested to see kind of what the footprint will look like inside. There's such a strangely broken up space, but I think the menu will be comforting and delicious, but it hasn't opened yet. So mid-November, like they're hoping right around Plaza Light time to get their doors open.
And what is the news with Messenger Coffee and Ibis Bakery?
So Messenger Coffee has their coffee in coffee shops all over town, but this is going to be their space. It's a beautiful old building in the crossroads that they've renovated. There's going to be a rooftop patio, bakery, and they're partnering with Ibis Bakery, which is also part of Fervere, that combination. So you can get the baked goods from Ibis as well as Messenger Coffee now.
And those are sort of the artisanal breads.
Exactly.
Okay, so closings. This is the sad part of what's changed in the restaurant scene. And Charles, you have a couple of spots that you're telling us about that we've lost.
Well, you know, Blanc Burgers and Bottles finally closed its last location.
Finally.
I never thought much of that Leawood location. I thought it was too small. I never figured out how they made any money there. And it was kind of claustrophobic. It's sad because, you know, they kind of started a lot of the current trend of upscale
gourmet burgers.
I hate the word gourmet.
Well, but that's what they were.
Yeah.
Well, they were
the first.
They were creative.
Absolutely.
And, so they're gone, and after 9 years, and
is that often though what happens with someone who kind of starts a concept that takes off, and then other people take it a little further, and then you're kind of left in the dust.
I think there was a lot of premature expansion there.
And Josh Ian's left and went on and did his own thing.
Well, and I think opening the plaza location was a disastrous move. But
well, so they're gone, and Plate.
Plate, that's, you know, there's some mixed thoughts about it. Is coming back.
That's the space that where there was a fire,
right?
And in East Brookside,
right? On what is it?
Oak.
And it is coming back.
Which is great news. People keep asking, are they going to reopen?
There's some insurance issues. But the last time I wrote a piece for Spaces Magazine a few months ago, and the owners assured me that they were going to reopen.
So, and then, Mary, you have a couple of other closings to tell us. Or excuse me, Jenny, you have some closings to tell us about.
Yes. So Ape Thai Restaurant on 39th Street has unexpectedly closed, which is sad. He had also announced he was going to open Mr. Boy, Thai rolled ice cream place next door. Both of those are no
Mr.
more.
Mr. Boy?
Mr. Boy, named after his dog.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then, sounds like a gay bar.
Julian in Brookside is gone. That was Selena Teo's kind of first foray after she got out of the American. And it has that beautiful patio, and it's going to be flipped into
Barrio.
Brookside Barrio.
Yeah.
You guys, do any of these closings represent a loss that's significant to the Kansas City food landscape, to the way we eat and what we have available to us?
You know, I might throw a hat in the ring for Abe, but, you know, it's one of those where he tried to do kind of authentic Thai in a way we hadn't seen before. But for the rest of them, I think it's just the natural course of now moving on to other things. Yeah, you know?
Cyclical, very mm-hmm. cyclical.
Yeah.
Well, we did not get to all of the new places that our critics were hoping to review this morning, but the list that we have online will include all of those. I hope you'll be able to check it out. Our trusty list of new restaurants will be ready for you online at kcur.org just in time for the weekend. Charles Ferruza, Jenny Vergara, Mary Block, thank you all so much for these reviews and all the news.
Thank you so much.
And Charles, Jenny, and Mary are Central Standards food critics, joining us every other Friday. You can listen back to anything you've heard this week on our show at kcur.org/Central Standard. Highlights include a chat with a 9-year-old girl who's a professional BMX bike racer that was part of a larger discussion about the craziness of kids' sports today, and thoughts from a local gospel musician on coping with the heartache of the news cycle. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, and Andrea Tudhope, with help from intern Tom Taylor. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs right here in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend.